Welcome to the Farmers Weekly Podcast, this episode recorded on Friday the 9th of April 2021. From the Farmers Weekly News Desk, I'm Johan Tasker.
And I'm Hugh Broome.
It's been a cold week. How is the Arctic blast affecting crop progress?
It's chalk and cheese compared to spring 2020.
On the markets, is there light at the end of the tunnel for pig prices?
We've had a better run since sort of middle end of February. Trade in Europe's got better.
Police are warning farmers to make sure loads are properly secured after a devastating accident.
You can do a good risk assessment on the back of an envelope. It's just about thinking about what you're doing, what could kill you, and what you're going to do to stop that happening.
And how one Lake District school has made a film telling visitors to their village how they should behave.
If your footpath goes through a field, please follow the path and please shut the gates.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
But first, an Essex farmer who lost £8,500 in a sophisticated scam involving fake tractor adverts on the internet is warning other farmers not to fall victim to the same fraud. Seb Blake, who farms near Chelmsford, transferred the money into what he believed was a holding account to buy a 2002 Case CS94 tractor advertised on eBay. But he's lost the cash and there's no sign of the tractor, with the fraudster saying only that Mr. Blake will be contacted about delivery in due course.
When he said that, the hairs on the back of my head stood up. I thought I'd been scammed. So I suddenly started typing in eBay tractor scams and everything on his mobile number and everything else. His mobile number hits up on a site called Who Called Me. And apparently loads of people have been done by him. They've been being done since 2019. He's been doing it with a John Deere tractor, motorhome, this Case tractor. But what annoys me, Johan, is 5 minutes ago, the tractor is still listed on eBay for sale. I mean, it's physically made us ill. And that's what's annoying me, is it's still for sale. So he's still scamming people.
Having lost £8,500 of his life savings, Mr. Blake says he doesn't want other farmers to fall into the same trap.
I want only one stupid person to be in the village, me. I don't want 10 other stupid farmers walking around scratching their heads saying, why didn't someone mention this? Why didn't someone tell us about this? It's my stupidity at the end of the day, obviously, because I should have double checked. I should have dotted the I's and crossed the T's. If it stops another farmer, if a farmer's going to buy a tractor off of eBay, I've saved someone their life savings.
That's Essex farmer Seb Blake. It's the top story in this week's Farmers Weekly. That's the 9th of April 2021, written by Farmers Weekly correspondent Debbie James.
Apparently, this scam has been in existence for several months, maybe even years. He reported the scam on 7 occasions. This only happened a couple of days ago. So he reported it on 7 occasions to eBay, and they're refusing to take it down. So in that interim, in that interval, more farmers potentially could have been scammed out of money.
That's Farmers Weekly correspondent Debbie James.
So, Johan, how did this scam actually work?
Well, it's quite a complicated and sophisticated scam and very believable, Hugh. What happened was that Mr. Blake saw this tractor online. He thought it was a really good price. And he contacted his local dealer and said, does this seem right to you? And they looked at it and they said, if we were selling it, we'd charge VAT on it. So it would be more expensive. But as it's a private sale, no VAT. And it looks bona fide to them. So he got all of the information from the seller. He ran an MOT check. He got a V5 certificate. Everything looked above board and in order. And then he was asked to pay the money into what's called a PayPal payment after delivery account, a holding account, if you like, so that the seller could then send the tractor over. And if he didn't like it, the money would be returned. If he did like it, the money would be released from the holding account. And it looks as though that is where things started to go wrong. So after paying the money into this holding account, and Mr. Blake says that the alarm bells perhaps should have started ringing, The money was taken and there was no tractor. So, but I have to say, this holding account was really, really believable. There was a link there. It looked to be from eBay and PayPal. It even had a live chat facility and everything was good. So that is where Mr. Blake lost his money. We've contacted eBay to request a comment. They've not come back to us. But what we're saying is that people really, really need to be aware of these scams and to be careful when they're buying stuff. As Mr. Blake says himself now, if he was buying something from eBay, he would not part from any cash unless he could physically see the machine, touch the machine, and actually drive it away.
Absolutely. And that's good advice. You know, you want to sort of go and see it, and then if you're happy with it, then transfer the money. My recent experiences with eBay, as much as I love eBay, and it's a fantastic platform for selling stuff, but it can create work. And it seems to me the smaller and fiddlier the farm stuff is, the more time waste does it get. So, for example, if you put on I put an old diesel generator on there, which was it was operational, just needed a bit of TLC, but it would have done someone a turn. That just attracted total time wasters. They all bid on it and then they never come back to you. Where I am, you get a lot of people out of London. And so what you can't do, and then we had the same with an old quad bike we were trying to sell, a secondhand quad bike. We actually had to sell it three times till it sold. And every time someone said, oh, the winning bidder, they either didn't contact, or one guy said, oh yeah, I can't collect it for 2 months because of coronavirus. He said, well, it's outside. Why did you bother bidding in the first place? But the really annoying thing is you can't black mark people that do this time-wasting thing. So you have to cancel the sale and then you start again. But you can't give them bad feedback until they've actually bought it. So that is a really annoying thing. If you could call out the time wasters, it would save a lot of mucking about. You put absolute... Can I use the word crap on the... I'm going to use the word crap. You can put absolute crap on eBay. And this is what amazes me. Big bits of farm kit. And it stuns me how much it makes. And they're always lovely people. Turn up, collect it, job done. I once had an old hay tedder, which was the Gibb Class 6 rotor hay tedder, 20-odd years old. I paid nothing for it, used it for a few years, then the middle gearbox blew up and it was beyond repair. Put it on there thinking, oh, someone's going to give us 300-400 quid for it, you know. I think I paid 800 quid for it. I nearly fell over backwards. It made 1800 quid, and the dear man drove all the way from Aberdeen to pick it up. It took him 13 hours to Surrey. So that was a good eBay result, but clearly there are some pitfalls. I get that, and you do need to be careful, and you do need to be able to call out these time wasters because they just do my head in.
And in terms of this one, I mean, this scam that got Mr. Blake, I have to say, the more he's looked on eBay since, the more scams he's found, including motorhomes and other tractors. And in the case of this tractor, it is still for sale. So as we're sort of doing this podcast now, that tractor, the fake tractor that he bought, is still advertised for sale there. It's a 2002 Case CS94 tractor. We have got some advice in Farmers Weekly on what you should look out for when you're buying machinery online. NFU Mutual says, and it's the old adage, if the price seems too good to be true, it probably is. So do check it out, as you would with a car, to give everything a thorough inspection and a test drive. So unless you can see it and drive it away, don't buy it.
It's worth mentioning, despite the problems with the platform that we've talked about and these rogue traders out to scam people, do not forget there are some really good traders on eBay selling some really good stuff. And that's either established machinery dealers moving their secondhand kit that way, or people that just run a business selling good solid kit and do a really good job of it. So if in doubt, ask friends for recommendations, and also look at people's feedback on the items. That usually gives you a really good indication as to whether they've been going for a long time and if they're doing a really good job. So just take your time, be careful, and if in doubt, ask.
Hi, I'm Philip Cosgrave from Yarra. For grazing, if we want to take advantage of the grass growth curve in April and May, then don't just focus on nitrogen. Grazed swards need an adequate supply of phosphate, potash and sulphur to take full advantage of nitrogen applications. Yarra Mila Extra Grass and Yarra Mila Stock Booster S are specially formulated for grazing with a required NPK and sulphur ratio in a true uniform compound to support high grass growth rates at a time when grass demand is at its highest on many farms. With cow health and reproductive performance in mind, why not use Yarra Mila Stock Booster S, fortified with selenium to boost your herd's selenium status. Finally, next week on Wednesday the 14th of April, we will be hosting our next Grassland webinar, where I'll be joined by Cormac Garvey of Laley. to discuss grazing systems for robotic milking and how to best manage fertiliser applications this season. To register for this webinar, go to yara.co.uk or check our social media channels.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
Now, for many, the weather's become a lot colder in the last week. It's been utterly bitter out there. It's stalled any crop growth seen in the previous few weeks, particularly that little warm blip we had around Easter. But how are crops faring and what's going on disease-wise? Earlier, I caught up with various agronomists from across the country to find out what they were seeing on their rounds. Firstly, Stephen Harrison is from Southwest Agronomy, based near Bath.
It's chalk and cheese compared to spring 2020. I'd go so far to say it's almost looking like a normal spring. I know it's been a bit cold and dry, but that's not unusual for March. That cold snap that we had in February really slowed things down. The crops are generally, they're responding well. They're picking up nitrogen. They're getting the colour in them. I think everything's on course for a fairly normal sort of season in my book. Disease pressure's pretty low. Growth regulators that were scheduled to go on about a week ago, we've pulled till next week when the weather warms up. And apart from a bit of yellow rust, we're not really chasing fungicides too much right now. All seed rape is way better than the past 2 years. A lot of people, threw the baby out of the bathwater and abandoned the crop for obvious reasons. But there's one or two have stuck with it. I've got a couple of people who've got all seed rape pressing businesses who need their own grown all seed rape, and that they've persevered with it, and they've been rewarded this year.
Linda Shepherd is an agrivista agronomist in the southeast, covering Sussex and Surrey.
The crops look really good. I mean, they have come to a bit of a standstill this week, but generally they're well tillered. There are some patches that suffered a bit in the wet. I've seen some barley yellow dwarf virus, quite a lot of that, where they didn't manage to get an aphicide on. Hybrid barley's got some brown rust in it, but generally we're anywhere from still mid-tillering up to growth stage 31, depending on when the crops were planted and the fertility of the soil.
Ryan Hudson is an independent agronomist with Velcourt, based in Hertfordshire.
Yeah, crops have got a good amount of nitrogen in them. We've had a good warm spell. Crops look really, really well, and disease pressure is low at the moment, like I touched on. And I think that will continue at the moment. Yeah, there's no significant rain on the forecast. Septoria was quite prevalent earlier in the year, but again, a dry spell of late has sort of reduced that pressure. And I think once it does warm up, crops are going to put quite a lot of growth on quite quickly. We've got good tillers on plants. They're going to put a good bit of growth on pretty quickly when it warms up. And I think that'll help just move the plant away from the dirty leaves in the bottom of the plant. And hopefully we won't have to spend excessively on fungicides when we get around to T1 in a week or two's time.
Damien McCauley is from Indigrow and covers the East Midlands and across up to South Lincolnshire.
In general, we're looking okay. I mean, obviously, we have had some bare fields that were planned for winter cereals, which weren't drilled in the very wet autumn. So we've got a slightly higher spring cropped area than we were perhaps originally planning, but not as much so as 2019-20. We've definitely had a bit more success with drilling in the autumn this year than last. But the crops are looking okay. They're looking quite good in general. They've ridden through the winter quite well. It's quite interesting. You're looking at crops now that are experiencing dry and hopefully warming conditions soon, but they're still showing the legacy of what's been a very, very cold, wet winter for them, and a long, wet winter for them. So they are still showing the signs of that in terms of there's quite high levels of septoria in the base of the winter wheat crops. We've got plenty of yellow rust kicking around in any of the susceptible varieties. Winter barley is showing brown rust. The oilseed rape is now showing some symptoms of light leaf spot, which hasn't been evident until now. And things like winter beans are... they're a little bit slow out of the ground, particularly where the land is heavy and perhaps not the freest of draining soil.
So, Hugh, so far so good this year.
Clearly the cold blast has had a big impact and effectively has pressed the pause button after things just started to move just before Easter and over the Easter weekend when we had that little blimp of warm weather, and then it's just suddenly ground to a halt. The other interesting thing I think to take from the audio there is for many of us, certainly down here in the southeast, and you speak to people in the southwest and in the north, the autumn has been reasonably okay, and the winter Yes, it's been cold, but the rainfall hasn't been as excessive as last year. But interestingly, there's a real chunk probably coming off the Wash in the sort of east, the top side of East Anglia, off the Wash, South Lincolnshire, through into that East Midlands block. And the rainfall there this winter has been seriously above average. And those guys are probably sat there pulling their hair out, thinking, all you idiots in the south and the north and the southwest talking about lovely autumns and having all your drilling up together by September. And they've really struggled in places to get all their drilling done. So it's interesting to hear they're still catching up to do there. And obviously the waterlogging has affected crops.
And where I am on the Essex-Suffolk border, we've got some oilseed rape coming into flower. It does look like people are coming back to that crop a bit.
Well, I think the crop is vastly reduced. There's no denying that whenever you speak to anyone, they're growing less oilseed rape. However, some of the oilseed rape that seems to have weathered the storm actually looks okay. I suppose at the end of the day, though, it did have a reasonably good start in most places. When we had that horrific year before last season, it was mainly down to the fact, yes, the issues around flea beetle, obviously, but also double compounded by the fact it was so dry when it went in the ground for so many people. It just didn't get the germination. This season, a lot of the oilseed rape that went in the ground had perfect rain just after drilling, and it just got away, had a good start. And as we know, that's the key to everything. So the bits that are around and there is a reduced acreage actually look quite reasonable and are doing okay.
And in general, well, let's hope the weather continues to be good. Could do with warming up a bit. And already I see on social media some people saying they need a splash of rain.
Yeah, now as I say, it is really dry. Certainly down here in the south, it is dry and some rain would be welcome. Although ploughing ground for maize as we are at the moment, there's plenty of moisture in the soil, but obviously it's trying to conserve that. And I say it would just do. The grass is just waiting to go. It's got all the nitrogen on. It's wanting to go, but it can't because it's barely 3 degrees and it's just miserable this last week. But that Arctic wind has just been awful from the east. It's been terrible. So hopefully the weather is going to turn this weekend. We may get a splash of rain in the south and possibly the north as well, and then things should kick on next week, and before we know it, it'll be greenery everywhere and we'll be rocking on.
Hi, it's Scott from KWS. Unleash the potential of our seeds with free consultancy and tools from the new MyKWS service. You can sign up now via the link in our bio on the Farmers Weekly podcast site. If you use the link to sign up, you'll automatically be entered into a prize draw to win one of 10 KWS goodie bags. Good luck, and we look forward to offering you great free services for your seeds.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
You are indeed listening to the Farmers Weekly Podcast. A very warm welcome wherever you happen to be listening to us from, or through which of the wondrous array of podcast platforms you are listening as well. A warm welcome along. Coming up, we're going to be going to Cumbria, to the Lake District, to find out how one primary school, or one set of primary school pupils in a village, have done their own take on the new countryside code in a bid to educate visitors to their village, because obviously it gets very busy and it's probably about to get very busy as well as lockdown eases. Don't forget also, if you want to get in touch with us, you can. The email is podcast@fwy.co.uk. That's podcast@fwy.co.uk. If you're sat in your tractor, bored at the moment, going up and down on auto steer, why not send us an email and tell us about yourself and what you'd like to hear on the podcast. You can also leave a 5-star review, because they're the best, and lots of people have been doing that, and the usual podcast platform places where you do reviews. So it's all very easy, but please do get in touch, because we really do love hearing from you wherever you happen to be.
Hugh, talking of a busy, bustling countryside, I hear you're winding the locals up down your way by building a silage pit. There's lorries galore everywhere.
Yeah, a lot of lorries. It's the wonder of muck. It's a magic muck silage pit. So, yes, it's slowly taking shape. It's a bit brutal, isn't it? Whenever you do this sort of thing and you get big bulldozers in and you've got to strip all the topsoil off a field, and we have lots of walkers on the farm. And I'm still waiting for the vinyls to come from Amazon to print so I can print some signs to tell everyone. But obviously everyone is asking, what are you doing there? And of course, I start by telling them we're building some form of new nuclear reprocessing to partner up with Sellafield on their doorstep. No, I don't tell them that, although I do wind them up sometimes. It's not car recycling, no. It is actually nothing more perilous than two lovely new silage pits made into a lovely earth bund, so we can highly revolutionise our silage making and not wrap so many bales and go back to doing clamp stuff. And they say if you stand in the same field long enough, nothing ever changes. We probably last did clamp silage about 30 years ago, and now we're back into it again. Well, we will be. So, yes, there's lots of lorries running muck in to make up the banks, etc. So, as you'd expect, it gets the old curtains twitching.
So not caravan storage or anything like that, then, not diversification. Sticking to what you know.
No, exactly. This is farming. This is future-proofing the farm for the future by doing good, sensible, logical, agronomic, sensible stuff. Yes, so doing that, and we're planting lots of maize ground at the moment as well.
And looking to the future, market prices, what are they doing and what are they going to do?
Thank you, Johan. Starting with the finished steer deadweight average this week, it edges up another 6p to 397.1 on the deadweight. Live weight also heads up over nearly 10p to 226.6. Lamb prices, deadweight just slightly back a bit after those highs just before Easter of last week. Currently 619.3, so it's back about 7p on the week. The live weight, though, edges up about 15p. 301.7 was the average SQQ live weight across the country for last week. Now, as we head to the arable markets, just edging back slightly, just a notch, pound back for feed wheat this week, £185.20 for a tonne of feed wheat. The average price for a tonne of milling wheat is back exactly a pound to £202. Feed barley also sees some pressure off, £152.60. That's back about £2 on the week. But all seed rape still doing its own thing. Just edged back up slightly this week to £417.30 a tonne. So that's up about £2 on the week. Now, over the last 12 months, pig prices have been at some of the lowest levels for over 20 years. Prices have struggled since last June due to import restrictions imposed by the Chinese government on German products because of African swine flu restrictions. And to make matters worse, companies exporting pig meat from the UK have had to deal with Brexit border issues since January. Andrew Chitty runs Dawkins International and processes half of the cull sows in the UK. He told us the European trade has been really difficult since the 1st of January.
Brussels added a lot more pieces of paper to the system, absolutely just to give us a hard time. You're British, you've chosen to leave, you're going to have a real kicking from this. Both Rotterdam and Calais were told, make it very hard for the Brits, which they did very successfully. We thought we were going to have about six new pieces of paper to get our trucks out to Germany. We run with 16 pieces of paper now. The Europeans added a 7% VAT. The Germans didn't want to help us at the time. The Belgians didn't want to help us because they had excess amount of product. They had COVID issues. And just to add to things, whereas we would get a truck through from England to Germany in 36 hours, it was taking anything up to 8, 9, 10, 11 days.
He went on to say prices are now starting to recover.
We've had a better run since sort of middle end of February. Trade in Europe's got better. China is now taking a lot more product from Spain, Denmark, which that's created a bit of a vacuum. So Germany is now filling those gaps in Europe. It works a lot better now because I think we've all found a level. I think the French government, the Dutch government, all of them have realised that being very awkward all the time isn't going to work. I think they've also realised that originally they were going to have the same checks put on them by us as of the 1st of April, but that hasn't happened. That's now been moved back to the 1st of October.
Andrew told me that although the trucks are now moving quicker, the costs have risen significantly.
A truck's taking about a day and a half extra now instead of 5 days extra to get to Europe. That's costing us, on average, between 1,200 and 1,500 quid a load with all the extra veterinary checks, the paperwork systems, the agents that we have to use at all the ports. So it's about doubled our cost and added another 48 hours to every load.
That's Andrew Chitty from Dawkins International.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
Hello, I'm Oliver from Amazon. Spring is here, and with this year's forage maize crop being established, Amazon Precision Seed Drills have always been a favourite with growers and contractors alike, and so the new high-speed Precia will not disappoint. Complementing the well-known ED and EDX drills, the new Pursuer keeps those fundamental strengths of simplicity of operation, its enviable reliability and accuracy of both spacing and placement, even at speeds of 16 kilometers an hour and more. In a recent DLG-approved test, the drill achieved ratings of good and very good across 7 different seed varieties, including fertilizer placement. The unique electric drive measuring system is automatically adjusted to pick up and fire just one seed at a time down into the Pretec double disc sowing coulter. No doubles or misses with the Pursuer, just perfect spacing along the row and excellent soil to seed contact. Amazon, engineered for those long days ahead. Find out more at amazon.co.uk.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
Now, police and safety experts are warning farmers to make sure loads on trailers are properly secured both on and off the road. Failure to do so runs the risk of having a serious accident. The importance of secure loads was highlighted during a recent road safety webinar hosted by the Cheshire County branch of the National Farmers Union. Health and Safety Road Transport Advisor Nina Day.
A farmhand was driving JCB with some straw bales on a trailer, and he didn't strap them down. It was only a short journey. He was only going at low speed and he didn't strap them down. As he pulled onto the road, he braked because a cyclist was coming and one of the bales came tumbling off the trailer, hit the cyclist who was known to him. You know, they were neighbours. It's a small, close-knit community. And unfortunately, that cyclist ended up with horrendous head injuries. He was in an induced coma for some time. He's got lasting disabilities, lasting medical problems, and it's just been devastating to everyone, to the farm worker, obviously to the cyclist and his family, and it was something that didn't need to happen at all. And he knew himself that he should have strapped it down. It's quite understandable why he didn't. He thought it was just a short journey. It's a quiet country road, very few people there. He didn't think it was a problem. And it was a journey he'd done many times before without having problems. And this is one of the big issues that you can get away with it, if you like, for quite a long time without something going wrong. But you just need that one day where everything goes wrong at the same time. And then you're in a situation like this and you've got a worker who now has to live the rest of his life knowing that he injured somebody so badly. A friend and neighbour has suffered these terrible injuries. Nobody wants to be in that situation. So even those short journeys, you can't say, oh, I'm only going down the road. It's not a problem. I'm only going at 10, 15 miles an hour. It's not a problem. It doesn't matter. A lot of the really serious load shifts actually happen at less than 30 miles an hour.
Nina Day emphasised the importance of carrying out a proper risk assessment before any journey, no matter how short.
It's all about thinking, you know, what is the risk if this comes off? Doesn't matter how long your journey is. You can do a good risk assessment on the back of an envelope. It doesn't have to be this hugely bureaucratic thing. It's just about thinking about what you're doing, what could kill you, and what you're going to do to stop that happening.
That's Nina Day from the Health and Safety Executive. Police Sergeant Rob Simpson highlighted the sort of incidents encountered by the Cheshire Rural Crime Team.
I've never spoken to anyone yet who doesn't really want safer rural roads. We all want that. So trailers with insecure loads was number one on the list. The lack of strapping to secure those loads as well. Trailers that were carrying stone, aggregates, and also crop as well, that have that real risk of debris coming off the trailers because they've not got covers on and they're going to end up on the road, on the carriageway, and potential risk for other people using the road. Movement of mini diggers or other farm, you know, like farm machinery, plant machinery around as well. We're finding that people are using the weight, or assuming the weight of that item will keep it as a friction on the load bed. So we're not seeing the strapping down. We are just seeing it's a short journey, just going around the corner, and it's that kind of people's acceptance of risk.
Police Sergeant Rob Simpson. NFU Cheshire County Chairman Richard Blackburn chaired the webinar.
It's being aware of these things can happen, and unfortunately they will happen unless we do something about it. The size and speed of tractors now, it's always getting bigger and faster, and we're in a rush to get our jobs done. And it's just taking those few minutes just to have a look at what we're doing and trying to remain safe.
That's Richard Blackburn from the NFU.
So, Johan, this is, at the end of the day, this is common sense stuff, isn't it? Which is what you should do. And if you don't, I mean, what this tells us is that the outcomes can be really pretty devastating, can't they?
Yeah. And what Nina Day is saying in that piece, load security in agriculture is something that often goes under the radar. It can cause a lot of problems. You know, things flying off vehicles, debris can hit other road users, as we heard there, you know, absolutely devastating accident. Two people involved, the driver and the cyclist, and they both have to live with the consequences for the rest of their lives.
And it's just, it's time, and it's doing the job properly. And if it needs strapping down, if it moves, just strap it down. And I mean, talking about risk assessments and things like that, I mean, yes, you can do a risk assessment on paper and file it, but actually, more importantly, you should be doing a mental risk assessment every time you load a trailer, particularly a flatbed trailer, where it's likely that something could move or come off, because it, you know, if it needs strapping down, just buy some straps. It's not rocket science.
It's not rocket science, but look, we're coming up to silaging. Then we've got harvest. This is when people drag trailers out of the nettles, hitch them onto the back of tractors, and then roar about the place with heavy loads. And it's just not good. Jane Gurney, friend of the podcast, a farm safety campaigner, she runs the Tilly Pass scheme. Her son, Harry, was killed in a tractor and trailer accident in 2014. And Jane's been campaigning on trailer safety ever since then. The Tilly Pass is a series of daily checks that people can easily undertake. The website for that is in the show notes for this episode of the Farmers Weekly podcast. It's tillypass.co.uk. But they are simple checks, Hugh, that everybody should be doing. It's your responsibility as a driver and as an employer to make sure that the equipment that's being used on the farm is roadworthy, it is safe, and it's not been neglected.
And as the carting season's about to start, be it silage, hay, straw, grain, whatever, just remember to get the road etiquette right, because there is nothing worse than being stuck in a queue behind a tractor for miles and miles and miles, and the tractor never pulls over. You should pull over. It's in the highway code that you should pull over, and it's good for farming PR to pull over. Let everyone pass. Let everyone cool off and then move on again. It's annoying, but it needs to be done, because there's nothing worse than huge queues. It's bad enough around here where I live, where we've got loads of cyclists on the road, that you get stuck behind a cyclist with a tractor, then all the cars behind you. It's a super compound pressure cooker of rage that then erupts as they then overtake you, stick one out the sunroof, and then they shout the cyclist. And it can all be avoided by just pulling over and staying out of the mayhem. Also, talking of trailers, there is the most wonderful a feature in this week's Farmers Weekly about buying livestock trailers that the machinery team have put together. It is fantastic. I didn't know there were so many sheep trailers out there. So go and check that out.
Hi, I'm Lindsay, marketing manager for Massey Ferguson. Our grass kit range is growing in popularity, and if you want your grass season to run as smoothly as our equipment does, you need the MF hay and forage range. With a portfolio spanning a choice of both drum and disc mowers, high output tedders and rotary rakes, there's something for all applications and farm sizes. Contact your local Massey Ferguson dealer today or visit masseyferguson.co.uk. Your grass season sorted.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
Now, a group of Cumbrian primary school children have taken to the small screen to tell people about the Countryside Code. The pupils from Grasmere Primary School in the heart of the Lake District made the film as their community is preparing for a massive increase of visitor numbers as the lockdown starts to ease in the next few weeks. Earlier, I caught up with the head teacher of the school, Joe Good.
In the world.
We know that for some people all around the world, the Lake District is a really special place.
There was a sort of raising of tension in the community, really. Obviously, we've had a lovely time in lockdown because it's been really quiet and we live in a beautiful place. We're very lucky. People need the tourists to come back because they are a very important part of life here. An awful lot of people rely on them for their income. But there'd been a bit of antisocial behaviour. I mean, not... It wasn't everybody by any means, but there'd been some antisocial behaviour by tourists end of the last lockdown, and people were very worried that because everybody's likely to stay in Britain this year, we were going to get deluged by people who weren't going to behave well in the countryside.
Top tip one, please take your litter home.
One of our school aims is that we want to give the children the skills to react courageously and creatively to all the challenges they meet in life, and positively to all the challenges they meet in life. And this is one of those obvious situations where we went, okay, here's a sitter for actually working through difficult situations and giving them a chance to do something for their community and discover they do actually have a power to change things for their community and make the world a better place, which children don't often get a proper opportunity to do that, and especially not when they're in lockdown sitting at home with their families. It was a good chance to do a piece of collaborative, positive work that hopefully will give them life skills for the future as adults.
If your footpath goes through a field, please follow the path and please shut the gate.
Top tip 4. Keep your dog on a lead. Sheep can suddenly appear anywhere on the fells.
Sheep can get scared easily.
And they are sensitive, especially when they're lambing, which is in late April around here.
We started talking to the children about it because you've got two options, haven't you? Either go very negative and just complain about it all, or you think, right, is there anything we can actually do about this proactively to try and solve the situation before it happens? So that's what we did, really. We came up with a list of everybody's whinges about what might happen and then tried to turn that into positive messages that would help people to come and have a really lovely time and make sure that it still stayed a beautiful place for everybody to come and enjoy, and that people who actually live here and work here could carry on with their normal lives as well. So.
Top tip 9, come prepared.
We hope you have a great time exploring the fells.
But please make sure you come prepared and leave your flip-flops, parasols, skateboards and party gear at home.
Our school is bang in the middle of the village and it's got footpaths on either side of it. So if you walk out of the school gate, you literally can't walk across, along the footpath, because there are so many tourists coming at you from each direction. And that, when you've been in lockdown and it's been absolutely quiet, that's a real shock.
Things that you might need when you go for a walk. A map.
They've learned masses about media, about presentation, about how you get your message across. We've worked with Janine Bevington at Gorgeous Media, who's a brilliant filmmaker, as you can tell.
And that's what you might need. Top tip 10, take your time.
This beautiful place that they love, they don't want it to get damaged by people leaving litter. They don't want the wildlife distressed.
Remember, respect, protect, enjoy. Welcome to the Lake District.
Okay, what a fantastic film.
Is it? Do you know, look, we've had two fantastic films we've talked about the last couple of weeks. Mark Frost's one last week, and this one is absolutely brilliant. It's so well done. Credit to the Janine, the filmmaker, who works with the school. She lives locally to the school, I think, and she helps them out. It's just a great little film. If you go onto YouTube and just search Grasmere Primary School, it'll come up there and you can watch it and do share it. And it's just a great, yeah, it's just so nicely done, and it's all the countryside code stuff. And what's really interesting is how I think what's fascinating, and she said it, Jo Good, the head teacher there, said it about the sheer numbers of visitors to their village. I mean, it is tourism central where they are. It's a seriously popular place. But the sheer numbers of people that walk past the school gate, they can't physically get out the door because the place is so ram full of tourists. And I suppose it's the impact that has on the kids when they see that the countryside around them is being impacted in some, not all, but in some cases in a negative way.
The thing I like about it is that it really shows the need for a living and working countryside, and for people, the importance of tourists coming to see what we do, enjoying what we do, enjoying the wider countryside. And it's a film that has been done in a really positive way, that showing the need for people to come and what they contribute in terms of the rural economy, that kind of thing. And it's done by children. And I thought the whole thing was fantastic.
And of course, it's done by children whose parents, on the whole, all the families at that school, the vast majority rely on the tourists coming to make the local economy work. So it's just coming at that angle. I think it's really clever how they've done it. So do go and have a look at it. Do share it. Or better still, go and make your own one for your community, because it's actually, when you look at that, it's not that, it's relatively simple, and it just sends out a really good message and a fantastic exercise for the kids. I mean, just phenomenal exercise for the kids in terms of the process and what they learn doing it. Really tools them up for the future. Good stuff. That's it for the Farmers Weekly podcast this week. Thank you so much for listening. Do not forget, if you are feeling lovely and benevolent, do leave us a 5-star review on whichever podcast platform you use, and we will obviously name check you for your kindness. We will, of course, put all the links to the various things we've talked about this week on the landing page for the podcast on the Farmers Weekly website. But until next week, from me, Hugh Broom, goodbye.
And from me, Johan Tasker, goodbye.